This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world. Today we have a new guest on Dreamland. She's never been on Dreamland before. She comes to me in a very interesting and exciting way. Anne brought her to my attention, and Anne is here. She will be channeling. She tells me that Duane will be able to channel her, and her little old channeling truck with at least one flat will also try, and you know who that is. And here is the reason Anne was so interested in this. Duane has written a book, she'll tell you how it came about, called Return of the Divine Feminine, Rise of the Divine Masculine, and the Men Who Are Calling for Her Return. I am such a man. So she immediately directed me to this book. She is right here now. She's been here very strongly with me since yesterday afternoon, and much more strongly even this morning than then. And as you know, you've never heard me talking about this on Dreamland before in quite this way, because it's never happened in quite this way. Anne is actually present. She's not quite physically present, but she is almost. She can touch me. She can definitely interact. And so this is Whitley and Anne welcoming Duane Keir to Dreamland for the first time. Duane, welcome to Dreamland.
Thank you so much. I'm just absolutely delighted to be here.
Well, I'm glad, because we're delighted to have you. Duane is a psychic channeler, hypnotist. She's an ordained minister, spiritual teacher, and performer of sacred ceremonies. You can find her at Duane Keir, that's DuaneKier.com. And she's got a really fascinating book, The Return of the Divine Feminine, The Rise of the Divine Masculine, is right in my wife's wheelhouse. This is what her life was about and what she's still very much about. So Anne welcomes you too.
Thank you.
Now, let me ask you, let's begin with balance and a world out of balance. You have some very powerful things to say about that. Can you tell us, first of all, where this sense of the world being out of balance came from in you, and how that led to the writing of the book?
I think that at a very early age, I just felt like things didn't work right here. I couldn't quite figure out why they didn't, but I used to, even as a small child, stand at my bedroom window and say, okay, I'm ready to go home now. Y'all can come get me. And I kept waiting for someone to come get me. And when that didn't happen, I had to figure out how to navigate this world that just didn't work right. There just seems to be so much ugliness here. I've sometimes wondered if we were kind of made wrong or something, or there was some kind of disconnect. But a lot of my consciousness of the imbalance in the world, I think I came from being female. And you already know that I started out, I was born in Mississippi to a mom who was a Christian fundamentalist and to a dad who was almost an atheist, or at least found the church quite distasteful. And so as I was growing up with this psychic ability, the only frame of reference I had for it was, you know, from my mom's side and her belief system, as opposed to my dad's side and kind of a lack of a belief system. So I actually ended up going into the ministry, graduating from a Southern Baptist Seminary, working for the Southern Baptist Convention itself. And it became very glaring to me. I joke that, you know, Christians believe that someone died and rose from the dead and walked around and ate and talked and what have you, and that compared to that, the kinds of things that I was seeing and hearing and experiencing shouldn't have been that big of a deal, but I found out that they were. And especially as a woman having these kinds of experiences, that I wasn't supposed to be a seer or a prophetess or, you know, a preacher or what have you, because I was supposed to support men in that role. And it finally got to the point that I couldn't keep myself in that box any longer, and I had to burst out of it. And I think that was where I found, personally, more of an imbalance, you know, just in my own personal life, and then watching it kind of play out across the planet, this belief in duality, and I understand where it comes from, but I feel like it's done so much damage to us, this whole idea of flesh versus spirit, and that the body is bad, and that the spirit is soul and needs to be saved, and then it kind of, you know, it overflows into everything else in our life. We put everything else in into that duality framework, you know, us versus them.
Right.
And, you know, that just, it keeps everyone out of balance, including within ourselves.
Annie has a statement here. Mm-hmm. She says, duality is the reason you're here. Meaning, I think the reason that she chose you to come on the show, that you understand a lot about duality. She says, there is a duality now. Long ago, this world saw God as a woman. Now it sees God as a man. And what is important about your work is that there is a third way that balances the two. The politicization of everything these days has meant that there is now a push to remove the divine male and replace him with the divine female again. In other words, now it's me talking, for the pendulum to just swing back to where it was, but something new is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is Annie again. You guys have to see that there can be a balance, and Duane knows about this. All right, what do you know about it? I hope I'm right. I hope she's right.
Well, I hope she is too. I could share my feelings about it. One of the things that I learned from the men who participated in this book is that we have some really obsolete concepts of God, and those obsolete concepts of God are actually keeping men from getting in touch with their divine masculine. And their divine masculine is something completely different from our obsolete concepts of God.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about what it's like.
The divine masculine is actually, I guess we can do a comparison. When we're looking at the obsolete concept of God, there is no feminine. There's only the male God with the male son, with the male apostles, with the male preachers, with the male writers of the Bible, with the male this and what have you. And with the divine masculine, it's a completely different story. A divine masculine energy has incorporated its divine feminine. And so what what the difference is there is that it's about unity and union as opposed to duality and separateness. We human beings are weary of duality and separateness, this us versus them kind of energy.
This is why Annie got you on the show, I'm sure.
It's just exhausting, you know. And I also feel like that it's one of the reasons why we have such an incredible, challenging and difficult time manifesting. You know, we're continually told in the New Age movement that you can create, you can manifest, you can do this, you can do that. And, you know, people go to all these workshops and seminars and conferences and still can't do it and wondering what's wrong with them. And I don't think it's so much that there's something wrong with them. There's something wrong with how we've been told that we are or can be.
Boy, does that sound true.
Yeah, for me, it has more to do with, I mean, you can look at Mother Nature. It takes both the male and the female energies, principles, to conceive, to give birth, to create, to manifest.
Yes.
And it's the same thing for us individually, is that until we can bring the divine feminine, divine masculine, not God, as we have been taught to believe in him, as some kind of external, internal, eternal being, that it's until we can bring the divine feminine, divine masculine in unity within ourselves, it's going to be incredibly hard for us to create and manifest.
It is going to take courage. We have a moment here. We've got to take a little break for the free Dreamlanders and free Dreamlanders. As always, listen up and do your thing. We'll be right back. You know, if we could get 500 more subscribers, we would be able to deliver the entire program to non-subscribers as well, still with commercials, but they would get it all. And those who had subscribed would get so much more. So think seriously about it today. You don't hear anything like this anywhere else. Dreamland is unique in the world, and I know it and you know it. So today, help us reach that goal. 500 more subscribers, and we free this website profoundly to do even more, and you'd be part of it. Join up. Go to Unknown Country right now and help us meet our goal.
Support unknowncountry.com and its great mission to make contact happen. Use our vast archive of interviews, meditations, commentaries, news, and Whitley Strieber audiobooks to expand your mind and your understanding of close encounter. Meet others who have similar interests on our active free message board or in our subscriber comments and Wednesday night chats. There is no other site like Unknown Country in or out of this world. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe today.
We're talking to Duane Kerr, her very important book about rebalancing mankind is Return of the Divine Feminine, Rise of the Divine Masculine, and the Men Who Are Calling for Her Return. Her website is duanecare.com. That's duanecier.com. Okay, Duane, when we left the air, we were beginning to talk a little bit more about imbalances. And I thought maybe you might hear something from Annie while we were on break. I don't know if you did or not.
Well, one of the things that you and I had previously talked about is that I had been picking up on Annie for several days, and especially this morning, but didn't want to assume it was her, you know, out of ego. But then you confirmed for me that she definitely was.
Oh, yeah, it's her all right.
One of the things that she wanted me to share is something that you personally already know, but that she just wanted to confirm, is that I'm getting a little emotional, that the two of you really embodied these kinds of energies and principles. She's saying, Whitley, you know, you were the more feminine in the relationship and I was the more masculine.
That is true.
And that was one of the reasons why we came together, because we complemented each other so well and balanced each other so well. And it's why we needed to be together, not just for the other, but for ourselves, and also for the kind of work that we were going to be doing. And it's one of the reasons why y'all are still together, that you have not separated. She may have left her body, but the two of you are very, probably, and I hope this is not being disrespectful, but probably even closer now than you were when she was in the physical body. And she brings a divine feminine presence now. She always had it when she was in the body, but she's bringing an even more divine feminine presence into your life now.
Yeah, she's not she wasn't a sort of substitute male, but she was the active part of the marriage, definitely, and I was the passive part. I realized that early on when we used to have a lot of fights, and when we were first married, and she was wanting things to be done a certain way, and she always seemed to know better than me what we should be doing. And so I thought to myself, you know, she really does want to run this show, and I'm going to do that. I'm just going to let her. And she did, and we became very comfortable. We were at the Pine Ridge Lakota Sioux Reservation about 10 years ago together, and one of the chiefs was watching us work together and talk together, and he said, I think my listeners might know this. I'm sure they've heard it before, but it's a fun story. He said to Ann, you have an Indian name. And she said, oh, what is it? And he said, your name is Three Quarters. And she said, why Three Quarters? He said, well, because you're three quarters of this marriage. I said to him, what's my Indian name? And he said, you don't have an Indian name yet.
How interesting.
So, you know, I'm laughing, but at the same time, this is about accepting roles in a new way. The man is wired by culture, not hardwired, but wired by culture to think that he is the one who is supposed to rule the roost and be the dominant presence. But this is not necessarily true. Every marriage, and that is between man and man, woman and woman, man and woman, every marriage has to find its own balance. And so do we in our relationship with the divine and with our planet. That's, I think, is her message.
And she's so strongly, and I mean, I know your listeners already know that, but she's just so strongly with you now in an even new and different way than she was when she was alive.
It's like, oh, yeah.
She can come into more of her divine feminine, and she says that she's been watching you come into more of your divine masculine. It's a beautiful union. It's a beautiful blend. I think one of the things that keeps us from doing what you and Annie were able to do when she was still alive, and that you continue to do now that she no longer has a physical body, is that I really want to delineate between men and patriarchal systems. One of the things I learned through this process is that the patriarchal systems in place across the planet are just as damaging to men as they are to women.
Absolutely.
And I have to confess, my own sexism is that I did not see that until I went through this process. I just kind of assumed that all men were benefiting from the patriarchal systems in place across the planet. And through this process, I learned that nothing could be further from the truth. No one, including the earth herself, no one is benefiting from the patriarchal system in place across the planet. Now, those that are supposedly the powers that be, in traditional terms, may be benefiting. But when you look at it from a higher, wider, deeper perspective of soul and spiritual growth, they are not benefiting either. We're lopsided. And it's keeping us, I believe, from actually continuing our evolutionary process. But one of the things that I'm learning is that because it's not just women who are calling for her return, that it's also men like you who are calling for her return, and the men who participate in this book, is that she is hearing our voices, our call, our summoning. And, I mean, she's on her way, not to take over, not for women to take over. That's not the way the divine feminine works. The divine feminine doesn't look at domination. The divine feminine looks at cooperation. The rebirth of this is going to be new and different. It's not just going back to a way that used to be, even though the divine feminine, even back then, was much more into cooperation than domination. It's a rebirth of that into a higher, deeper, wider perspective. And one of the things that we have to keep in mind, you know, we talk about giving birth as this absolutely beautiful process. You know, pregnant, and you're having a child, and how wonderful, and all this and what have you. And we forget that the birth process is very painful. It's very bloody. It's very messy. It takes a lot out of the woman who's giving birth. There's a recuperation time needed. You know, we can compare it to how messy things look right now. It may very well be that this messiness is that birth or rebirthing process that begins in the darkness of the womb. It doesn't begin in bright light necessarily. I feel like we come from bright light into the darkness of the womb, but is going into the darkness, being willing to go into the darkness, that we find this birthing, rebirthing process able to actually happen, to produce itself.
So this is this process. It is a birthing process, and in a sense, Earth is our mother, and there are midwives here who are guiding us. And some of those midwives are who got you to start working on your book. Can you tell us a little bit about that? About the experience of you're writing a novel about the divine feminine. And all of a sudden, things change. What happened?
I had gotten up one morning and was headed to the bathroom, you know, my first stop when I wake up in the morning. And in the doorway between the bedroom and the bathroom, I was just like stopped dead in my tracks. And one of my guides said, "We need you to stop writing that book, that novel about the divine feminine, and we want you to interview men about the divine feminine and write a book about that first." And I joke in the book that I had a fair amount of suspicion and a tad bit of testiness about it. It was kind of like, what? You know, it was like, and I asked, are, you know, kind of like, do you know who you're talking to? Not out of ego, but kind of like, do you remember who I am? You know, I'm a former Christian fundamentalist. I tried to find a place for myself as a woman through reading Christian feminism literature. And when I couldn't do that, then I went to spiritual feminism or feminine spirituality. And, you know, and there was a part of me that was going, interview men. Haven't we already heard enough from men about all this? And one of the reasons I think I was called to write the book is that I needed to go through a learning process to be able to share what I learned along the way. One of my guides was giving this, that the divine feminine is returning. She will stimulate the rise of the divine masculine to meet her. Their union is going to give birth to a new creation upon the planet, and we need you to help prepare the way. And I'm like, I really need to go to the bathroom. So
yeah, you were on your way to the John.
And so it's like, oh, okay, whatever. You know, I'll do it. And I had absolutely no idea how I was going to do it. I mean, you know, I've just kind of learned to trust, you know, what my guides are asking of me or requesting of me. And so within the next couple of days, I got a download of 33 questions that I was supposed to ask men. And even when I was getting the questions and writing them down, I'm going, I have no idea why I'm supposed to ask that question. Or there would be a question, I go, well, that kind of sounds like a question you've already given me to ask. But it would be a little bit of nuance there. And I thought, okay, I'll ask that one too. And when I got the download of the 33, I refer to it as my veil came down. A veil kind of falls and I know I'm done. And it's like, okay, now what am I supposed to do? You know, I've got to find some men who are willing to answer these questions. So I started, you know, contacting almost every man I knew going, would you look at this? Would you be willing to have dinner with me to discuss your answers? Those that weren't nearby started, you know, emailing, had the survey on my website for a while. And as I started getting the answers, it was like, oh, now I understand why I was supposed to ask that question. Oh, now I understand why that question was a little bit different because it's getting a little bit of a different answer than the other one that was like it. And so over a process of a year, you know, I'm transcribing these interviews, getting the surveys down, what have you, and then the veil comes down again. It's like, I'm going, okay. I said, you know, I took that as a sign that it was time to begin writing, but really I had absolutely no idea where to start. It was like, okay.
Yeah, they never give you that. I'm having the same problem with the book right now. I got to get to write a book about a new vision of Jesus, which is a very daunting topic. But then my thing is, okay, well, what's our new vision of Jesus? And basically the answer is you figure it out.
And it's like you're just kind of sitting there like, okay, I said yes to this. I didn't know what I was saying yes to.
Right.
But, you know, I've learned to trust.
It's so true, but go ahead.
And so I thought, okay, well, am I supposed to take each of the questions? And that's the title of the chapter. And then I talk about how all the men answered that question. Or do I, you know, each chapter is one of the men and how they answered, you know, all of the questions. And I'm just trying to figure out, I just couldn't get clarity on it. And so I decided to do a really novel thing and, you know, just kind of sit down, go into meditation and ask, okay, how am I supposed to do this? How do you want me to do this? What am I supposed to do? And I got this really, you know, that can be very cryptic, right? I got this answer back, begin with the end. And I'm like, Well, that's incredibly helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, I get those. And then you think, oh, good. Well, that solved the problem.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
But
okay.
You did a beautiful job of it, I have to tell you.
Oh, well, I then had to ask, what do you mean begin with the end? And then, you know, the answer came with what you learned from it all. And I thought, well, that's not what I thought I was signing up for. You know, that I didn't realize that was part of the deal. And then it was like an ego thing, like, wait a minute, this book isn't supposed to be about me. It's supposed to be about these men, you know, let's not get this, you know. And they're going, no, it's not about you or them. And I'm kind of sitting there like, what? And it was like, no, it's about the return of the divine feminine, the return of the divine feminine. Stimulating the rise of the divine masculine and the new creation on the planet that their union is going to give birth to. And I went, okay. So I then had to spend time learning, you know, really and truly. I mean, I had been listening, I had been learning along the way, but I hadn't really pulled it all together about, okay, what have I learned through this process? And when I started really diving deep into what I learned, it was like, oh, okay. I get it now. It's not only what I've learned, but what all of us need to be learning.
And we're going to find out more about that in just a minute. We'll be right. This is Whitley Strieber. I'm going to be attending two conferences over the next few months. The first is Consciousness and Contact at the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, July 18th to the 22nd, I'm going to be there with Yvonne Smith, Alan Steinfeld, Ananda Bosman, Kevin Briggs, and others. It's a small conference, but it is a very interesting one. It's going to include a traditional Lakota feast. I'm going to be talking about ascension and the afterlife based around my book, The Afterlife Revolution. There's going to be a breakfast and a trip to the Wounded Knee Memorial. There will also be a Sundance. Other speakers will be Cindy Ketches, who will provide an overview of Lakota spirituality. Alan Steinfeld, his research on hybrids, remote viewing, developing multidimensional consciousness. Ananda Bosman will be discussing the 432 healing frequency and what it all means. Yvonne Smith will be talking about abductees. There's going to be a lot going on there. If you want to go, call Mia Ferroleto at 802-952-6217 or email her at mia.ferroleto@gmail.com. That's 802-952-6217 for Consciousness and Contact, July 18 to 22 in the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Then, on October 4th through the 6th, I'm going to be at the Portal to Ascension Conference in Long Beach, California, and along with a very large number of other guests. It's a big conference. Billy Jackson, JJ and Desiree Hertak, Barbara Lamb, Jason Quitt will be there, Alan Steinfeld again, John D'Souza, Michael Tellinger, Ray Hernandez will be there, Travis Walton will be there. As I say, it's a big conference, October 4th to the 6th at the Atrium Hotel in Irvine, California. Find out more at ascensionconference.com.
The new Unknown Country is becoming a social hotspot for people interested in UFOs, ETs, the contact phenomenon, and so much more. Becoming a site user is free and enables you to participate in our active free message boards. And if you join as a paid subscriber, you'll also gain access to our weekly subscriber chats and video meetings, plus access to our podcast archives, meditations, video section, and so much more. So join free or subscribe. Either way, unknowncountry.com belongs in your life.
We're talking to Duane Keir, Return of the Divine Feminine, Rise of the Divine Masculine, and the Men Who Are Calling for Her Return. Annie directed me to a particular part of the book that she would like us to discuss. It's chapter 3, What I Learned, Loss of the Human Male. And you write there, when you think about the stories of gods having children with human women, such as the Virgin Mother Mary conceiving God's son Jesus, do you ever question why the human male was left out of the creative process? Why or why not? Now, you bring a lot of wisdom to that question, and my wife is very respects this. She thinks it's a very fine passage. So can you talk to us a little bit about the wisdom, about what you brought when you in your response to that question?
It was, you know, one of those questions that was downloaded that I'm going, what? And as I started looking at it, it was like, well, it's so true. We have a divine God and a human female, but where is that human male? But he was completely left out of the equation. And I mean, I know there's lots of stories like that, you know, from history. You know, a god and a human female.
It's extremely common. Thing in mythology, right?
And I really appreciated some of the humor I got from the men. It's like one of them said, "Well, you know, I just always thought Joseph, you know, was taking one for the team, so to speak." Well, that's a very, you know, lighthearted way to look at it. But I'm thinking there's something here that I've never looked at, that I've never contemplated before, about the human male being left out of the creative process and what happens with that. How does that make the human male feel? And how does that set up the story, whether you believe in it or not, personally? I mean, it's a prevalent story, especially, you know, in Western civilization, the history of Christianity. You know, there's, as a former Christian fundamentalist, I mean, this was believed literally, you know, when I was growing up, and I even taught it and preached it and what have you. And so as I was, you know, interviewing, surveying the men about this, first of all, they just didn't put, they never really given much credence to the story, except maybe as a metaphor. And so I was really impressed with how, you know, they just took common sense. It's like, you know, this couldn't have happened. And then the ones that were talking about, you know, even if they grew up believing it and didn't believe it anymore, the way that it affected them was, you know, that they weren't really important in that process. How do they create? How do you make up for being left out of that creative process? And then that brought just this rich, rich, rich subject matter about how men find to be creative, you know, of, in your case, I mean, you write, you create books, you create stories. Men playing music, writing songs, writing poetry, getting involved in theater, creating new businesses and what have you. And that they find a way to be creative, but still the story itself kind of relegates them to the back page in the creative process.
You know, there's one answer here, one response that, again, Annie's hit on here and wants me to read. This is in reference to all of the stories of divine beings being created by gods making love with virgins. It protects rulers from those who discover their inner divinity. Awoken ones are immediately dismissed and persecuted, since it is impossible for mortal men to be truly in touch with the divine unless they are born of a virgin. In other words, it's a double power play. It is in the sense that it disempowers any claim of divinity that a man may have from his own soul. And it also disempowers the validity of the divine emerging out of a human woman.
Exactly. It you know, whether we believe the story or not, it sets us up to believe that there's no way that we can be divine if our father wasn't a god and our mother wasn't a virgin. You know, whether we believe the story or not, it still, right. still sets that up. And it also sets up this external reference point rather than an internal reference point. I feel like one of the things that I learned through this process as well had to do with as long as we worship an external God, it's going to be incredibly difficult for us to embody our own higher selves or our own soul or our own spirit completely, to get in touch with our own divinity and knowing that we're actually in touch with the divine because we're a spark of the divine, and that we don't have to look outside ourselves for that, that it is inside us and it is who we are. I think some of the damage that's been done by religion, and I fit more into the New Age movement than I do most categories, but even with the New Age movement, is that there's this tendency, you know, in religion to talk about, you know, getting to heaven. And in the New Age movement, it's about ascension and what have you. And I think one of the things I learned through this process is that it's not about getting to heaven. It's not about ascending. It's not trying to get out of here. It's trying to get more of ourselves in here, to embody more of our soul, more of our spirit in our physical body rather than trying to get out of our physical bodies. And I think that that whole concept of duality set us up for that too, that flesh versus spirit kind of thing. I know one of the things that I really appreciate, there's so many things I appreciate about your work, but one of the things I really appreciate about your work is that one of the ways you teach meditation is by actually using our bodies.
Yeah.
That it's actually a tool. I mean, in my belief system right now, and it could change tomorrow if I get new information or knowledge or wisdom, hopefully I'll continue to grow and develop. But in my belief system right now, I believe that we choose to incarnate because it is the next best thing for us in our soul, excuse me, in spiritual development. It's not that we are fallen. It's not that there's something wrong with us. It's not that, you know, that we're trying, oh my goodness, we made a mistake and we have a human body and we're trying to get rid of it. It's like, no, we're trying to get more of our soul and spirit here. You know, almost every religious tradition on the planet talks about, and they kind of give lip service to it, but that whole concept of as above, so below, as in heaven, as in heaven, as on earth. I can't even say that right now. But we talk about it, but I don't think that we take it seriously. I really think it's one of the things that all of the avatars through history have been trying to teach us, is that you can embody more of your soul and spirit in your physical incarnation, and that's actually what you're trying to do.
Yes, that's what the sensing exercise is all about.
And it's such an excellent example of that, that our body is, you know, again, we're told it's our, you know, it's the temple, right? Our bodies are temples.
Right.
But we don't treat them that way.
we've been taught by the patriarchy to look up, not in.
Exactly.
Because in is where the dark is. In is the feminine. But we need to open ourselves in a new way. I agree. So let's go on down the road, you have what happened to you. Tell us about the 33 questions.
As I said, they were a download. I didn't even know why I was supposed to ask some of them. And especially those that look like, I felt like some of them were asking the same question in different words, but then I found out later that they weren't. The very first question that I received in the download was to ask the men, do you believe we're out of balance on the planet and need to welcome back the balancing energies of the divine feminine? I wasn't going to assume that these men or any men recognized an imbalance as I did, or thought that we needed the balancing energies of the divine feminine. And boy, did I find out.
Now, how did you choose the men that you asked the questions of?
It was really just another one of those listening to my guides. You know, it was like I sent it to anyone and everyone that I knew, because I, at the time, didn't have any kind of systematic way to get it out there. It was like, you know, first of all, contacting men I knew, then telling them to contact me and they knew. If I was parts of groups, you know, and there were men in the groups I was part of, I would say, hey, would you be willing to tackle this kind of thing? Not knowing if any of them would, of course. I mean, and I think one of the things that surprised me is that, you know, I said, you can give, you know, nice, short, sweet answers to all of them if you want. And some of them did that, you know, it's like, okay, bam, bam, bam. And then others, you could tell they had just really did a dive deep kind of process, that they took the time to really think about it and sit with them. And it was very gratifying to me to hear comments like, you know, I've never really thought about this before. And now that I'm thinking about it, I'm really having some aha moments about my own personal life experience and what I feel like life should be like, as opposed to the way I see it unfolding. And then there would be questions. Annie had, you know, pointed out the one about the loss of the human male. Another one that was kind of a counterpart to that was, you know, when you think about male gods having children with human females, what is it? Why did the female have to be a virgin kind of thing?
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, I share in the book that's one of my pet peeves, you know, that there's this idea of the virginal female that keeps us separated from our sensuality and our sexuality. But it also puts her in a position of submissiveness. You know, we congratulate Mary for just being submissive and going, you know, in her own way, God's will kind of thing. But there, it also brings up that question of, in the story, does she really have a choice? And that there's something very depowering about that story for women as well. Again, this whole idea of being a virgin or being virginal is, you know, the highest possible calling. And, you know, that's a real imbalance upon our planet. You know, men are congratulated for being, you know, studs, and a woman that might be exhibiting the same behavior or even just somewhat close to that behavior gets completely different designations. And I think we really lose a lot of our divinity in that process, because I feel like the sexual union is also one of is symbolic of the union with the divine. I mean, it used to be that women were seen as the entrances to the mystery, as opposed to, you know, vile and evil and sinful and the downfall.
And something that we should avoid our mm-hmm. and that should only be done in the dark. I can remember when I was a boy, some of the older people had bed sheets with holes in them mm-hmm. so that mm-hmm. they could make love without touching each other. And I have to tell you that is really very, very sad.
Well, and how much is lost through that process? You know, the union right. is, you know, one of our ways to connect with the divine.
Now, Free Dreamlanders, this is not sad, but it might be a little boring, and we hope that if it is, you should come on over to the website and subscribe. Come on, take the plunge. There are so many of you. If half of you took the plunge, we could give the show free to everybody. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't that be something you would like to facilitate? We'll be right back. As always, Dreamland's theme music is The O of Pleasure from Ray Lynch's beautiful album, Deep Breakfast, available at raylynch.com. You know, if we could get 500 more subscribers, we would be able to deliver the entire program to non-subscribers as well, still with commercials, but they would get it all. And those who had subscribed would get so much more. So think seriously about it today. You don't hear anything like this anywhere else. Dreamland is unique in the world, and I know it and you know it. So today, help us reach that goal. 500 more subscribers, and we free this website profoundly to do even more, and you'd be part of it. Join up. Go to Unknown Country right now and help us meet our goal.
Whitley's new book, A New World, is getting great reviews. American cosmic author Diana Walsh Pasulka says, "Enter this risky new world and leave empowered." New York Times reporter Leslie Keene says, "Riveting. I couldn't put it down." Amazon reviewers are calling it life-changing, mind-opening, the first real description of what contact is like and will be like. Don't miss A New World. As Professor Jeffrey Kripal says in his preface, this book is contact. Get A New World today. Available as a paperback, a hardcover, and an ebook wherever books are sold. And as an audiobook read by Whitley on audible.com.
We're talking to Duane Keir. Her book is Return of the Divine Feminine, Rise of the Divine Masculine, and the Men Who Are Calling for Her Return. And Duane, at this point in the show, I'd like to explore your website a little bit with you. Mm-hmm. It's a very lovely site, and let's talk about some of the things that are available, such as hyperdimensional hypnosis. Can you tell us a little bit about your work in hypnosis and what this means?
Sure. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do that. The reason I call it hyperdimensional hypnosis is that one of the things I try to do with clients is help them connect with their higher selves, that part of themselves that's still intimately connected with the original source of all creation, and to in conjunction with one's higher self, to go to the place or the time that will bring the most insight or healing for someone. Sometimes that's a past life. Sometimes that's a future life. Sometimes it's an other life. The reason that I don't really call it something like past life regression or what have you in that term is that I kind of feel like that's a misnomer, is that time is not linear, and that I think for sake of conversation, we talk about past lives, future lives, and what have you. But I feel like that we're probably living all of our lives at the same time in some way, and that perhaps when I die, that, you know, when I'm looking at this particular physical incarnation, I don't necessarily see that my next one would be karmic as much as it is based upon what is the next best experience for me to have as a soul, as a spirit. So this is the year 2020. Suppose I die tonight, I decide that the next experience I want to have that would be the best for my soul, spiritual development would, hey, you know, I've never experienced life as a peasant in the 18th dynasty of Egypt. I think I'm going to do that now. It has more to do, for me, it has to do with what is the next best experience as opposed to, you know, whether or not I get to be rewarded or punished. I think that kind of leads us in the wrong direction when we're looking at karma. To me, karma is just balancing out your experience, and that the divine is wanting to experience everything, and that we are the sparks of the opportunity to have those kinds of experiences. And also that we feed that back to the whole. In other words, I personally find it a little lacking when I'm told that, you know, we all came from the one and we're all trying to get back to the one. And it's like, that's it. That's all we're trying to do is just get back to where we first began. And I think it's a little bit more detailed than that. That we are coming here to experience and then to take those experiences back with us into the one so that they're accessible to everyone and everything.
Now, the birthing process involves, one, the return of the divine feminine, the rise of the divine masculine, and then their union. Annie says that the return of the divine feminine is resisted even by women who politicize it and turn it into a battle with the masculine.
Exactly.
So can you talk about how to bring forth the divine feminine in a way that there is potential for harmony?
Oh, that's a $64,000 question, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's Annie. She goes right to the source, boy. That folks, if you think I'm not channeling her, I think that you would agree that you're wrong there. That was a totally Ann question from the get go. So deep and so on the money. Go ahead.
Referring back to what I said earlier, is that this isn't about men and women. I mean, it is in some instances, but it's not so much about men and women. It's about the patriarchal systems that are harmful to all of us. And I think if we can change the language from men to the systems, to how the systems have been set up, not just politically, but religious and every otherwise, that it has to do with changing the systems that are damaging to us all, including the planet herself. Some of my frustration is that that I find some women who are so ingrained in the patriarchal system that they will fight tooth and nail against the divine feminine. Or to say the word goddess, you would think that I had just, you know, thrown boiling oil on them and then set fire to them. But it also has to do with what we've been taught about this concept of God and this God outside ourselves and the need to worship. And quite frankly, the fear of heaven and hell, or the fear of hell and not getting to heaven kind of thinking. And so there's fear-based in this that I think is very intrinsic in the issue. We can talk about it, oh, we're just talking about, you know, political systems, and I don't think we can talk about political systems without talking about religious systems, because the political systems are founded upon those religious beliefs. You've found in your own work that one of the reasons that we can't make more progress on the visitors is that there are religious fundamentalists who see them as demonic and something that, you know, has to be rebuked, so to speak. And so there's not even any scientific inquiry into it. And I think that's one of the things that's holding us back politically as far as being able to access the divine feminine and the divine masculine, is that we still have these obsolete concepts of God upon which not only our religions are based, but our political systems are as well. And so I think that, and I hesitate to say fight, because I feel like when you're fighting against something, you're actually shoring it up.
Right. You're strengthening it with the fight itself.
Yeah, it protects itself more. You can give the example, if somebody was continually attacking my house, I would shore it up more. I'd have security systems. I'd get guns. I'd do this, blah, blah, blah. But if nobody's attacking me, I don't feel the need to protect or defend or shore myself up as much. And so I do feel like there's things that we're supposed to fight against, but I really wish that we could shift from the fighting against to the embodiment of, or the empowerment of. When I can just speak for myself personally. When I am most in my personal power, and of course I can't maintain that 24/7, but when I am most in my own personal power, I feel absolutely no need to defend myself or explain myself or give rationales or excuses or what have you, because when I'm in my personal power, I feel no need to do that. My energy is speaking for itself, and I feel no need to go into a defensive position. When I find myself defending what I think or feel or believe, I'm going, that feels like the seeping away of my personal power. And I can only speak from, my own personal experience of where I've come to with that.
Before we leave the Free Dreamlanders behind, and when we come back, Annie has got, she's going to work directly with Joanne for a while, and we'll see what happens. But right now, she's wanting me to read a sentence from your book. Being willing to explore your path encourages continual questioning and feeling comfortable with ambiguity. That is, perhaps not all can be known at mm-hmm. this time. Can you sum up with a few minutes of response to that statement, which she thinks a very important one?
I think we focus too much on finding the answers or the right answer. And therefore, when we feel like that we found it, we give up questioning and we give up our own growth and development and potential to explore more and to find more.
I think that's just right on the money. And this is, of course, a central theme of Anne's work with me and with all of us, mm-hmm. which is...
Don't try to define them.
Yeah, right. She always says the human species is too young to have beliefs. What we need are good questions. Mm-hmm. And this book of 33 good questions is a rich treasury indeed. Return of the Divine Feminine, Rise of the Divine Masculine, and the men who are calling for her return, like this man. Joanne's website is duannekier.com. That's duannekier.com. And you can click through the Dreamland show page, of course. And there's a lot there. You could engage with her on a lot of ways. in a lot of ways. And if you want to pursue this more deeply and pursue your journey into balance, I can't think of too many places I would rather go than with Duane. I think she's got something very wonderful going. And so if you want to engage with her, go to her website, Free Dreamlanders. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.